Welcome to this podcast on mental health from the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries. My name is Annette Spencer and I'm the IFOA's Director of Public Affairs and Research. This month, the IFOA is supporting the Mental Health Foundation's Mental Health Awareness Week. The focus of the week is on the importance of kindness in promoting and maintaining positive mental health. And kindness has probably never been more important or relevant in all of our lives. The COVID-19 outbreak and the global response to it means that mental health has catapulted up the business and political agendas, perhaps like never before. And I suspect we are all rather more aware of our own and others' mental well-being than we were before we went into lockdown. So I'm delighted to be joined by Keith Leslie, who is the chair of the Mental Health Foundation.
Hello.
And also by John Taylor, the president of the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries.
Hi, Annette.
So we're going to discuss why positive mental health awareness matters, what's changed since the pandemic outbreak, and what we can all do to support our own mental health and that of those around us. So I'm going to start, Keith, by asking you about this. It's obviously no ordinary Mental Health Awareness Week, given the COVID-19 situation. I think it's left even the most resilient individuals feeling a bit anxious or isolated at times. And the challenges for mental health are being more openly discussed. So how do you think coronavirus is changing our approach to mental health? And what are the aims of the Mental Health Awareness Week, given the context of the pandemic?
Thank you, Annette. I think that the virus has changed a lot of things very superficially, but we're only beginning to discover what it might change more fundamentally in our thinking about mental health. So I think everyone, as you said, is much more aware of mental health challenges than we might have been 2 or 3 months ago. But it tends, by my observation, just to be general comments about we need to be worried about mental health, or mental health issues are more prominent, more talked about, without asking ourselves perhaps yet of what's really changed, or is it just we're becoming more sensitive to it? And I suspect we won't really have all the answers to that for quite some time. But it's clear, a couple of things I think are clear. Firstly, that in terms of a general level of anxiety and nervousness and uncertainty, the pandemic certainly is spreading that much more widely in the population. So we do regular opinion polling through the pandemic, which shows that levels of anxiety are markedly higher than they were before the pandemic. Second thing I think that is important is that the gap between the haves and the have-nots in our society, health inequalities, and how individual people are affected is incredibly varied and much more widely spread than we perhaps were all fully conscious. So the Mental Health Foundation is predominantly in the field of preventing mental ill health. We believe all mental ill health is preventable in principle. And one of the things that drives mental ill health is health inequalities, often driven by poverty or by other inequalities and discrimination in our society. And I think this is becoming even more prominent as a result of the pandemic. So although it's tough for everyone, and we, for instance, have a nice house and a garden, but still anxious about the children, the grandchildren, our own health, but it's much, much easier for us as a family than it is for families that we see on TV who are on the 15th floor of a building of council house flats, any flats, with small children and a broken lift. And it's very hard to get out and the kids are going crazy and it's very tough for the parents. That's just one example, I think, of how different the experience will be for some people. And I think that, again, is something that we're becoming more conscious of. And maybe the third thing which leads us into Mental Health Awareness Week is a consciousness that we can all take some action. So within the foundation, we've been running Mental Health Awareness Week for 20 years, and it grows every year. And every so often we discuss, is it the wrong title to call it Mental Health Awareness Week? Wouldn't it be better to call it Mental Health Action Week or Awareness and Action Week. And we say yes, but then that's what people go and do as a result of this awareness raising event. And of course, it's always problematic to play with a successful brand and the brand really works and everyone knows it. But it is, and the theme of kindness plays into this. It's not just about what you feel or what you're aware of. It's what you go and do as a result. And kindness, which is the theme of this week, and we changed it as a result of the pandemic because we felt that we needed a theme that would relate to the circumstances almost everyone is feeling and something that everyone is still able to go and do. And kindness is an action. It's something you say or it's something you do, not how you feel. And it can be small and it can help get over the major challenge of the pandemic, which is, I think, that people are just not connected in the way they were and the way we've been used to in normal life. So kindness is about picking up the phone. It's about going on a call. It's about helping out a neighbor. It's about sympathizing with children struggling with little ones at home. It's whatever kindness is being asked for in the circumstance and taking a bit of time and not oversharing maybe your own anxiety to someone who might be more anxious.
Thanks, Keith. I think that's really interesting, particularly thinking about the causes of what can often be behind mental health in the first place, and thinking about prevention as well as how you deal with the situation if it's in front of you. And I love the idea of taking action through kindness and all those little small things that make a huge difference and build up over time to make a big difference to ourselves and to others. So that's really interesting. John, I know that you've chosen this week to share your own experiences of coping with mental health issues and to talk about why you're supporting raising awareness. So I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about your own story to begin with and maybe also tell us what kinds of things have helped you.
Yeah, no, happy to do that, Annette. And in fact, this Mental Health Awareness Week's the first time I've ever really talked publicly about my own challenges with mental health, which probably go back several decades, you know, struggling with anxiety and depression over the years. And I think this, you know, Keith was mentioning earlier that the profile of mental health has never been higher because of COVID. And that's really been the catalyst for me to say, actually, if I can share my story a little bit now, it might do something to, you know, reduce the stigma and maybe encourage others to talk about their own challenges there. So basically, yeah, I've struggled with anxiety and depression in the sort of early part of my adult life, and it probably took me some time to recognise it for what it was. You know, there was a real kind of West of Scotland stoicism about just carrying on regardless, without actually trying to get in touch with myself and see it for what it is. But even once that was done, it's quite hard then to act upon it and recognise that maybe either seeking help, professional help, or discussing with friends and colleagues can be a beneficial thing to do, particularly when that stigma is around. So what I'm hoping to do by sharing it at this point, and I'm slightly, you know, I'll be interested to hear what feedback I get from people who look at the story on the website, but I'm hoping it allows others to feel a bit emboldened about sharing their own experiences, being able to talk openly about it, and to Keith's point, maybe not oversharing with friends and colleagues who are feeling anxious themselves in the first place. But yeah, it's quite all right to talk about your own concerns and take those steps if you are reluctant to talk to friends and family, maybe because you are worried about overburdening them. Then, you know, there are professionals, whether it's a GP, many organisations offer helplines, so you can speak to somebody qualified at the end of the phone, or indeed seek out a counsellor. That's certainly been one of the more beneficial routes that I've found in my experience. So I think, Annette, the key points I would leave people with is just reflect and maybe recognise some of your own vulnerability, and don't be afraid about taking some sort of action to make yourself feel better along the way.
Thanks, John. I think it's really amazing to have a leader of a profession. I mean, you're obviously currently the Actuaries President, sharing a story like this and also talking about those kind of practical steps, places that people can go to help themselves when they're in that kind of situation. I wondered whether you thought there were specific considerations or even maybe specific risks in terms of mental health that are special to actuaries, or whether it's just that actuaries are the same as all the rest of us in terms of how they might handle mental health.
Yeah, I mean, I think in it, you know, all human life pretty much is within the actuarial profession, so I wouldn't want to stereotype a whole group of people in any particular way. But, you know, there probably are certain factors that, if not unique to the actuarial profession, are maybe more relevant to us than are to others at this point in time. And I think, you know, probably one of the things is about counting our blessings, that the work that we do is generally amenable to working from home, and you know, not everyone has that that opportunity. So you know, that's generally a beneficial thing. But we probably are exposed to, you know, stresses along the way too. So you know, many students, for example, have just finished a set of exams. They'll be thinking about studying and working for the upcoming diet as well, and you know, equally the demands from clients and employers can be quite acute at this point in time, because the impact in financial markets or claims or operations or operational impacts on organisations are pretty acute, and often that's requiring actuaries to step up and support. So there are particular exam related stress and work related stresses that actuaries are under. And I think, again, it's just worth recognising that, being aware of that, and maybe even as you know, Keith was talking about earlier, you know, maybe be kind to yourself in that environment. You know, if you're feeling pressure to keep on the exam treadmill, I mean, these are really exceptional circumstances. If it's taking a toll on you, then why not take a sitting off? You know, qualifying 6 months later isn't going to have a dramatic impact in your career. And if it's what you need to maintain good mental health at this point, then you know, absolutely do it. And then the final thing I would say in it, you know, we're often characterised as being a very introverted profession. You know, the classic joke about an extroverted actuary is the one that looks at the other person's shoes. And again, it's a stereotype. It's not true for everybody, but we probably do need a little bit of encouragement to speak about our feelings sometimes. And again, that's what I was trying to do by telling my story and be quite open about some of the experiences I've had over the years, that hopefully it gives people just that little bit more latitude to speak to friends and family and open up about their own experiences, or indeed speak to professionals who maybe it's easier to speak to them because they've got less skin in the game. But I think those are all things that you know, actuaries and student actuaries might want to think about at this very unique time.
Thanks, John. That's really good practical advice there, and very timely as well, given the kind of annual cycle that actuarial work and actuarial studying can go through. So it seems to me, picking up on Keith's kind of theme of kindness in the Awareness Week, that we can see how being kind to ourselves and kind to other people is really beneficial for mental health. But I wonder what you both think about the business imperatives about improved awareness in this area. So what should business leaders be thinking about in relation to mental health, particularly when they're busy juggling all kinds of new challenges because of COVID-19? So Keith, any thoughts on how business people should be thinking about this?
Yep. My response would almost be, how much time do you have for me to talk about this? So one of the things that we observe is that firms with a high component of highly paid people, professional people, have a big payoff from focusing on mental health. So some of the first city firms that began 20 years ago working on equipping their management to talk about mental health challenges were some of the hardest-nosed city financiers you can think of. Think of your favorite investment bank that takes no prisoners and so forth. I won't name names here, but you can probably guess who, a handful of them I'm thinking of. They were the first people to work out that actually any investment they made in the mental health of their very qualified, very expert practitioners, often very numbers-oriented people, literally, not literally, but metaphorically, they're rocket scientists, investing in them staying healthy and staying in the job rather than being rotated out due to stress or whatever other pressures. Now, there was a huge payoff from this. They were amongst the first to get in there. And even though I would say point to employers' legal and moral responsibility for the health of their workforce, and that's mental as well equally with physical health, I would say that there's nothing I like better than a good financial incentive to invest in mental health. And I would say that the actuarial profession, almost by definition, every employer there is going to be in that category, that there's a good financial payoff from a mentally healthy workforce in having people who are performing better and on the job, whether it's at home or in the office or in front of clients or working analytically on their own. There's going to be a huge incentive. Our biggest challenge in the foundation, really, in the employment field, is the big employers of workforces at the other end of the spectrum, where there's an awful lot of people on minimum wage, and there's no great financial incentive. And so we have to use other means to persuade employers, government, and others to motivate themselves in that arena. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of employers out there. But I like nothing better than, no, your kind of profession where there's a big payoff from getting it right, from doing the right thing. Maybe that's just the Scotsman in me talking.
So it sounds like there are obviously good economic reasons, certainly in those kind of professional services businesses, as well as the moral reasons for making sure that we spend time on this subject. John, obviously you're in a kind of leadership position at the moment for the Institute and faculty, and I know you have similar roles in your business life. What's your view on the kind of the business imperative around this?
Yeah, so giving a perspective from another Scotsman, you know, the business case will feature in this too, Annette. But I think it's probably important for leaders partly to reflect again on themselves to begin with, because as you mentioned in your introduction, you know, they're under, you know, tremendous pressure at this point in time, managing something that they may never face again, they won't have faced in their career so far, and they've got a responsibility to staff, to customers, to try and keep the show on the road when, you know, revenues might be down, staff might be sick and so on. So there's a lot of pressure on business leaders, and I've seen some, you know, over the years who have gone off sick because they've placed such a burden on themselves. So I think business leaders do have a responsibility to look after their own mental health, and in so doing, you know, sometimes there's a benefit in showing a bit of vulnerability to staff around, you know, I think there was a time when the hero leader was the one that was worshipped in business, but actually in my experience many people respond better to human beings in control, and so showing a bit of vulnerability and humanity I think can be a good thing for a business leader to do. I think just being alive to the very practical things as well around making sure people are equipped to work from home as the lockdown starts to unwind, giving them clarity about what returning to work safely might look like in terms of travelling and being at work. And I think Keith touched on this in his opening question, just recognising the very diverse circumstances that individual employees might be facing. So some might be, like Keith, in a nice house with a garden, that's one set of environment. Another might be you know, a young single parent whose kid is no longer at school just now, and they're having to try and work at the same time as entertaining the child. And if all of that isn't enough to keep the business leader occupied, I do think it's worth trying to carve out a bit of time to think what the future for the organisation might look like, because I think this is a great time for reinvention. You know, trying to remind ourselves in society and remind ourselves in business, what are the core things that really matter to us in running our business, and what are the things that we'd like to reinvent
it.
And I think it'll be beneficial, obviously, for the business, but obviously gives staff a bit of a hope and vision for the future that they can see beyond the immediate challenges of the lockdown. So those are the kind of key things I think business leaders should be thinking about just now.
That's great advice. And I think you're right. There's a fantastic opportunity for people to kind of use what we're learning from COVID-19 and how we're all responding to it to actually think about what's really important and maybe kindness in business to kind of bring it back to the theme of the week. So I'm thinking about kindness more generally, and this is kind of my final question for you. I wondered what your advice would be if there are people listening to this and they want to be able to support their friends and their colleagues, maybe even their business leaders during this period when normal conversation can seem quite difficult. It's often impossible to have a conversation face to face and we're all working with new technologies. Keith, what would be your advice for how people can help each other during this time?
I think there's many things that you can think of doing, and it'd be foolish for me to say there's one thing that's going to work for everyone. However, having said that, I think there's a trend which I've noticed with a number of organizations I've spoken to during lockdown, which is after the initial crisis period, when everyone was scrambling to get set up, work at home, to deal with the supermarkets, to deal with family, kids, schooling, etc. Things then went at quite a pace in many organizations as they adjusted their business model to work in lockdown. Now, working remotely, accelerating virtual solutions, looking at new business deals, adjusting contractual terms that were no longer appropriate, whatever it might be, there was a period when things then moved very fast on the business front. And John just talked about the opportunity to think about the future of the organization, the strategy, and so forth. But I would say that one bit of kindness that many people at every level can perform is when talking with people to remind them that this is not a short acceleration and sprint. This is actually quite a long process we're going through, and we have to pace ourselves, get through it. And just reminding people that, well, unless it's an immediate business crisis, maybe not everything has to be done today or this week or this month, but to work out, well, what's the timeline where we can do this sustainably with our human resource, with our financial resource, that maybe all the technology fixes, the new business models, we'll try them out on the right timescale, not the fastest possible one, where we burn people out very quickly. And I think a very practical example of that is not going at such a pace that everyone's on screen on Blue Jeans or Zoom or Teams or whatever it might be every minute of the day. But staying that focused on a video screen is much tougher than being in a meeting. So I guess my bit of kindness would be to encourage people to pace themselves.
I like the sound of that. John, what piece of advice would you have for people at this time?
The thought of pacing myself has a tremendous amount of appeal, particularly getting away from many of these Zoom calls. I think I would say many organisations, I think, have adapted pretty well to supporting staff in a variety of circumstances. So whether it's online quizzes or virtual drinks or whatnot, various social scenarios to keep employees and groups occupied and entertained and upbeat. And I think those work tremendously well. But I think I would encourage all of us to just maybe think of, you know, connections, friends and family, people in our networks maybe that aren't part of an organisation that are maybe out on a limb a little bit, because I think those are the ones that might be struggling most at this particular point in time, and just making an extra effort to keep in touch with them. And if you can't do it all yourself, maybe at least touch in with their own networks, people you know in common, and just make sure that between you, you're giving the bit of attention and TLC to someone who might otherwise be quite vulnerable. So I think that's a kind of major act of kindness that can help vulnerable people particularly. I've certainly like to think I've made a difference to a few people who are isolated in the community and from the world of work. And it's certainly true, even as I say, in the actuarial profession, you know, there are many individual contractors who don't have colleagues to work with, whose businesses may be struggling at this point in time. So, you know, make the effort to get in touch with them and show them a bit of kindness. And I think one of the nice things about the theme of kindness, not only does it make the recipient feel good, I think you can make the giver feel good, that you're doing a really good thing to make others feel good at this particular time. So that's one of the great benefits of the kindness theme that the Mental Health Foundation have chosen.
It's a win-win. And I think also it's a great tip to think about the people that maybe you haven't seen when you've been on the various virtual social events. Who are the people who are not visible, because they might be the people that you need to reach out to. So that's a great tip. So gentlemen, that brings this podcast on mental health to a close. So I'd like to thank Keith Leslie from the Mental Health Foundation and John Taylor from the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries for you both talking so openly about what is obviously a really important subject, particularly at this time. So if you want to find out more about John's personal journey with his mental health, his full story is on the IFOA's website now, and we'll be supporting mental health awareness throughout this week. And for those who are looking to find out more about mental health generally, how to help others, how to help themselves, there is a great range of resources available from the Mental Health Foundation website. So if you just search Mental Health Awareness Week on your internet, you should be able to access all of those resources really easily. So I think it leaves me to say, please be kind to others and to yourself. Please do take care of yourselves at this time. And thank you for listening.